it does seem like almost every major technology, the internet, right? I mean, it had a false start in 2000. It caused a bubble that the stock market crashed as a result of. Blockchain, crypto, I think, had a false start, and now it's again coming back. So these are examples. It's not like data that I think proves the point, but I think anecdotally it does seem like many big technologies do seem to have this false start element to them.
The startup investment landscape is changing, and world-class companies are being built outside of Silicon Valley. We find them, talk with them, and discuss the upside of investing in them.
Welcome to Upside.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Upside Podcast, the first podcast finding upside outside of Silicon Valley. I'm Jay Klaus, and I'm joined by my trusty sidekick, Eric Buffalo Hornung.
Sidekick?
Yeah, I thought you'd be upset about
sidekick.
That.
Sidekick?
I thought you'd be upset about that.
I can't even get to the nickname because you called me your sidekick. Batman, Robin, is that what this is?
No.
I'm definitely more of a Batman. You're more of a Robin.
You're right. You're right. In this context, you're definitely right. We're sitting here at CES 2020.
Buffalo!
Buffalo! Eric Buffalo Hornung. We'll get to that nickname here in a second. We're in a dedicated broadcast booth, thanks to the CES team and being media trailblazers at this year's event.
Yeah, I mean, we just got really lucky. That's what I'm getting out of this.
Yeah.
It's fun being a media trailblazer because we're surrounded with all these people from all these publications that have such reputations. I mean, you got Entrepreneur and Axios and USA Today and Forbes, and the list goes on and on and on. And we're just little old Upside over here.
It's great. It's one of those things where you look around and you say, how did I get here? And you're just happy to be there. We had a keynote presentation today from the CEO of Delta Airlines, and we were literally seated in the front row in the two most central seats for this keynote. What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive, Jay. I mean, again, that's a lucky situation. Everything in this CES experience, we're in the city of luck, and we got lucky last night as well. Weird phrasing.
Eric texted me last night and says, Jay, I have a good feeling about your luck tonight. Let's gamble. And, you know, I honestly have a good feeling about my luck all the time. So I was down. We go down there. He tells me to pick out a slot machine. And circling around a bunch of the slots, I pick a couple. We sit down. I put in $20. He throws in a hundo. Most boring slot machine of my life. I mean, you're literally just pressing buttons. There's not even a pull arm.
Right. But you were also betting small. You're betting $1.80.
I was betting $1.80 and you were betting $6. But I mean, I put in $20. You're right. If you're going to play small, you're going to win small. And I didn't win at all. Meanwhile, as I turn $20 into 25 cents, Eric's just pounding the six button. And all of a sudden, to my left, I hear the machine just go, Buffalo! Eric starts dancing as if like he expected this to happen. He wasn't even like exclaiming or surprised. He's just like, Buffalo! And the meter's just running, running, running. It's got a number on the screen that says like, okay, all these things hit. It's a bunch of animated buffalo running in place. And there's like a couple of times two on the screen. And the meter says 720,000.
Right.
And it's just running and running and running.
720,000. 72,000. 72,000.
It was 72,000?
72,000.
Well, Eric didn't win $72,000.
Right. As you can tell by me still doing this podcast.
But he did turn $100 into $720. And yeah, I was very jealous. It's the end of the story.
Yeah, that's the end of the story. It was a good story, though. It was a fun story.
Well, speaking of buffaloes and the frontier, today we are speaking with Loop Ventures, a research-driven venture capital firm based in Minneapolis and New York, investing in frontier tech companies. Speaking with Doug Clinton, the managing partner of this firm that was founded in 2017. Eric, you found Loop Ventures in our invitations to folks to meet us here at CES. What stuck out to you about Loop?
Well, Doug is speaking at a panel on the future of storytelling. And when I dug a little bit into his background, I found that they were really into this frontier tech space. You and I haven't really dug too much into frontier tech. I thought it would be interesting. I thought it'd be interesting to have him come on and talk about what he sees as the next coming technologies. So here we are talking with Doug.
the three of us talking together, a real Doug trio. If you have any thoughts, as a Pokemon joke.
I got it.
If you have any thoughts as we go along in this interview, you can tweet at us at UpsideFM or email us hello@upside.fm. We had about 30 minutes here with Doug, a shorter episode here today. But an exciting episode. And, you know, we like looking at the fringes. We like looking at the frontiers. And I'm sure this interview will be more of the same. So we'll get to that interview with Doug right after this. Eric, what do SaaS companies, autonomous vehicle companies, cybersecurity companies, blockchain companies, and consumer marketplaces all have in common?
They're all companies.
They're all companies, and they're all companies who have hired our friends at Integrity Power Search to help them fill their talent needs. Integrity Power Search is the number one full-stack, high-growth startup recruiting firm between the coasts. They partner with venture capitalists, private equity groups, and CEOs to build amazing teams for the world's most disrupting companies that may be SaaS, autonomous vehicles, blockchain, consumer marketplaces, insurtech, robotic process automation. Eric, they can do it all.
They can do it all, and we've seen them do it all. They are impressive.
Over 600 searches since 2012, more than 200 happening just this year in 2019. Their clients have collectively raised over $2.5 billion in venture funding. If you want to hear how Integrity Power Search can help your team fill your talent needs, go to upside.fm/integrity and get started.
Integrity Power Search, who are you going to call? That's their slogan, right?
I don't think it is, but maybe it is now.
All right. You're welcome for that one, Caleb.
Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
On Upside, we like to start with the background of the guests. So can you tell us about the history of Doug?
History of Doug?
Yeah.
I'll start with the history of Loop, which is very much intertwined with the history of Doug. Loop, we started about 3 years ago. There's three partners, myself and two people I work with for about a decade. I'm at Piper Jaffray, so we're a Midwest-based fund. I happen to be based in New York. But we covered the mega cap tech stocks for about a decade. You know, Apple, Google, Facebook were the ones we were known really well for, Amazon. And we started to see how much time and effort they were spending on things like artificial intelligence, robotics, AR, VR. So what we thought was the future of technology, the next wave post-smartphone. And so we left the Wall Street thing and started a fund to invest in those themes. And so my history is mostly that over the last 13 years, sort of been intertwined in the tech world. Immediately before that, I was an early employee at a startup, so I did do the startup life thing as well, which was a lot of fun. A company called Endpocket got bought by Nokia, so it was really fun to see the whole sort of success wave of how a startup goes through that, and hopefully a lot of our companies that we invest in have the same experience.
How do we all collectively decide what the next technologies are going to be?
It's an interesting way to ask that question. I like that. I think that there's, like, technology fundamentally is to augment the human, you know, experience, I think. Any technology, that's sort of the purpose of it. If you think about the smartphone, it's this computer that gives you superpowers. If you imagine the world like 100 years ago and you told them what the smartphone was, they'd think you were crazy. So I think that from this sort of fundamental point, the next technology, like as we decide this is going to be the next big thing, it has to have some sort of augmentative power. It has to make our lives significantly better. And I think when technologies have false starts, and I always like to use, this is not a great example, but 3D TV, where it's like people thought that was going to be huge. If you were at CES 10 years ago, that's all everybody would talk about. And it never really happened because it's like the experience just wasn't that great. The technology wasn't that compelling. And so I think the level of impact that a technology can have on you is one of the really important parts of getting people excited. When people get excited, they adopt it, and it becomes this sort of cycle where ultimately becomes, I think, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You sound a little bit like a futurist. How often do you think, from like a thesis-driven standpoint of, here's where I think technology is really going to augment the human experience, versus companies are coming to you, finding you, they're cutting edge, and you're saying, oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about that.
I think it's symbiotic. It goes back and forth. The companies inform and teach us so much when we have companies pitch us. And at the same time, we're always developing theses about problems that we might have. Simple problems, complex problems. Something we've been thinking a lot about recently is recycling, which is, I think, a really huge problem, huge opportunity. It's very topical. just sort of the green movement in general. And if you look at solar, again, 10 years ago, really promising technology. And it sort of had this false start. Technologies often have false starts. But recycling was something that one of our team members just said, hey, like, it seems like recycling is not very efficient. And like, we've been doing a lot of work on the EV space. What are we going to do with all these batteries afterwards? So sometimes it's just things that our team comes up with. But a lot of times, I mean, the companies that we speak to, even when we don't invest, in a lot of cases, we learn a lot from what they tell us and kind of how they see the future. So,
do you think that technologies having false starts is a long-term positive indicator or completely uncorrelated to long-term success?
I'd say anecdotally, I would probably say it's a positive indicator, but just based on examples, right? Like AI had kind of a false start in the 80s. VR has had a false start, and it's
Google Glass.
Google Glasses. And now AR is, I think, having a little bit of a comeback, right? But it does seem like almost every major technology, the internet, right? I mean, had a false start in 2000. It caused a bubble that the stock market crashed as a result of. Blockchain, crypto, I think, had a false start, and now it's again coming back. So these are examples. It's not like data that I think proves the point, but I think anecdotally it does seem like many big technologies do seem to have this false start element to them.
What year did you say you guys started Loop?
It was 2017, so we're about 3 years old.
And you guys are based in Minneapolis?
Correct.
But you're still primarily in New York?
Correct.
How big is the team and who's in Minneapolis?
So I'm a partner at Loop. My other two partners are both in Minneapolis. And then we have five other team members based in a combination of Minneapolis, New York, and San Francisco.
Why did you choose Minneapolis as a location with the spread that you already have in New York, or sounds like San Francisco as well?
Easy reason, my partners are both from Minneapolis, and the bank that we used to work for, Piper Jaffray, is headquartered there. I lived there briefly as well. It's a great place to live. There's really great talent there. And so it was sort of a geographic advantage, and also because that's where they wanted to be.
We're sitting here at CES in 2020, and there's all these technologies that everyone's talking about, right? Gaming's really big this year. It seems like automotive's really big this year. It seems like smart cities is really big this year. It seems like people are starting to talk about 5G. What's the thing that everyone's excited about that you're the least excited about?
Oh, we just talked about VR a little bit.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think VR still is in a false start phase. I think that the Oculus Go was a really good step forward for VR. But, you know, as a technology, there's a lot of really good experiences you can have on VR, but I still think we're probably at least 5 years, if not a decade away from sort of mainstream adoption there. And I was actually surprised how much sort of VR-related stuff I've seen around. There's a lot of sort of paraphernalia, I think, related to VR on the floor. And I haven't walked around that much, but it always catches my eye because I'm like, oh, I can't believe that like people are like really still trying to push this because it still feels difficult. So that's probably the big one for me.
Would you lump AR in with that as well?
I think AR is a little bit of a different beast, only because you can sort of separate AR into what you can do with a smartphone today, which is in everybody's pocket, and what you can do with the glasses. So I think that AR feels like it's much more real. And like I even saw walking over this morning, AARP has a booth, and they actually have an AR app to help people like...
AARP.
Yeah, there's some great marketing they can do there, you know. But the app is to, you know, you show it in like your kitchen and it will tell you where there are danger spots if you happen to be older and you know, you need to do a little work to make your home safe for you. So, I mean, I think that's a real world application in a standard company.
I've always kind of agreed with that. VR seems like it's still so everyday inaccessible for what I would want a human experience to be like. It seems like such a siloed thing. And I understand the argument of, you know, what Facebook's trying to do where they can make these hyper-realistic avatars of you in VR where you can communicate with someone else's hyper-realistic avatar across the world. And that seems compelling, but in like very small situations throughout the day, you know? Even we were walking around on the show floor earlier and there was a guy wearing Oculus standing there. And I looked at it, I'm like, I just want to rob this guy.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like when you see a robot in public for the first time. Like, you walk around San Francisco, and they're all over the place. But, like, if you've never seen a robot, you're kind of like, well, people kick them, right? People will do whatever to the robots. And I think when you see people using technology or you just see technology in general in the wild, there is that reaction of, like, wow, this is really different. And I think with AR in particular, because you were really siloing yourself away from the outside world, that's the purpose of the technology, it may be that element is even stronger.
What are the technologies that Loop is most excited about that other people aren't?
I know we talked about recycling. I think recycling's underappreciated still.
Like the robotics or like chemical recycling? Like what about recycling is interesting?
Chemical recycling, I think batteries in particular with EVs. I think EVs is another field that we're probably more excited than most people are about. I mean, I think that it's a no-brainer if you throw out timescale that eventually EVs are going to be the majority of cars on the market. I don't know if that's going to be 15 years away or 50 years away. But as a component of that, to really live up to the potential of being green, you have to do something with the batteries when they are done in the cars. That's an issue if you don't. Then it sort of defeats the purpose in some ways, I think, if you don't do that. So I think those two things are one thing we're really excited about. And the other that we've done a lot of work on is the neurotechnology space. So things like brain-computer interfaces. We've had this thesis where if you kind of think about technology broadly, I'll give you the futurist angle again, so the philosopher angle. 50 years ago, you would go and you'd use a computer in a giant cooled room, and maybe you'd have to do a punch card before you even do it to give it something to calculate. And then we obviously had the GUI, and you could use your hand to manipulate a mouse. It's closer kind of to like a sensory experience. Then we had touch screens, so literally you can touch what you want on your phone. And now we have voice interfaces, so we're getting closer and closer to this sort of natural computing experience. If you think about that progression, you're sort of just getting closer and closer to your brain's output, right? And so a brain-computer interface essentially allows you to bypass that sensory layer where your brain has to compute something and then put it out to your motor neurons if it's a touchscreen or to your voice to say whatever your command is. And so that's a technology that, again, it's hard to say timescale-wise when something like that becomes really mass adopted, but I'm really excited for the potential of it because I do think that it's the future of computing.
Does that make us more or less human?
I think you could argue both. I think... And this is goes back to the idea of technology augments humans. There's always this debate of, like, is technology good or evil? And I think that technology is neither. Like, technology is benign. It's human nature that is good or evil. And I like to use the example of social networks, where a social network is not good or evil, even though there's a really fun debate about which is true right now. It's the way that humans use the tool that makes it one or the other. So if you use a social network to stay in touch with your friends or maybe try to enlighten the world about something that they don't know about, that's a really good positive use of social networking. And then a lot of that stuff happens. You just don't hear about it as much. But when the bad stuff happens, bullying, you know, misinformation, you do hear about that. And so, you know, I think all technology could be used for good or evil. And I don't know if you can say any technology makes us more or less human. It just sort of enhances the experience overall. So I'm not sure which side I'd take on that.
I want to dig into this neurotechnology stuff because I've thought about it a little bit, but I guarantee you thought about it more. So we talked about false starts. To me, some of this neural technology getting closer and closer to our brain itself scares me because of what if there's a false start? If I put some sort of mesh on my brain and that's not properly protected or something, like, what are the downside risks of this? And where do you think that technology has to be before we actually start using it safely?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we have to be really cognizant of data safety with these brain interfaces initially. Because of what you said, like, there's from a physical danger standpoint, especially with the stuff that's available today, the non-invasive stuff, there's really not that much danger. Yes, there are electrodes, but the current is very minimal. Like, you wouldn't ever really get hurt. I think it's more about, you know, as a consumer, are you comfortable with some company collecting this brain data, which seems way more important than like your social media data, and then interpreting it to help you augment your life? So I think that's where it really starts. And in terms of kind of where does the technology need to go, I think we're starting to see some early applications where it's fun. Just like VR, there's some good gaming stuff. One of our companies, Neurable, has a BCI-based game where you can just control the screen with your thoughts. It's super cool. It's a great introduction to how the technology works. But very quickly, you can imagine a world where if someone is paralyzed, for example, and they need to manipulate a keyboard, they can't do it, they could actually use a sort of BCI-based keyboard. And instead of the way that BCI-based keyboards are generally done today is they're actually a circuit where you have surgery and it's connected directly to your brain. I actually think the non-invasive technology, the speed that it's improving, we could probably actually do that in a non-invasive way and make it much easier for people to communicate.
This gaming startup, that sounds like the ideal scenario where you could just play Call of Duty with your mind rather than having to like, how does that work? You like dive more into what that looks like? What are the limitations right now?
So basically the way it works is you'll see sort of prompts on the screen. And so certain points on the screen will flash and it might even be sort of naked to your eye, but you're still perceiving it. And when your eye catches the attention of something where you have an intention, so you have a certain spike in your brainwaves that the device is reading, it interprets that as a, like, I would touch this button if it were a touchscreen. Sort of, so that's basically how it works.
And are there limitations, like, on how good that technology is right now?
Yeah, there's definitely speed limitations, right? So, like, going through that processing sequence, it takes time. And then the technology has to be smart enough, and it learns over time too, obviously, but it has to figure out when you're having an intention and actually then perform the action. So like speed for speed, if I type something on a keyboard on my, with my iPhone and did something with a keyboard on a BCI, it'd be no match right now. But I think for early use case, like proving out the technology, which is still where we are with it, it's pretty compelling.
Let's talk about some of your portfolio companies.
Sure.
What are some of the most cutting-edge technologies that you guys have invested in?
The brain-computer interface stuff is up there. I'm trying to think of which companies we have announced and that I can talk about. I'll talk about another BCI-related one. So Neurable, as we talked about, is a non-invasive company. We've invested in a company that provides an invasive neural interface as well. So it's targeting more like clinical applications where, you know, you go in, you have surgery, and you have a super high bandwidth interface plugged into your brain. So it's more competitive with like what Elon Musk is building with Neuralink. So, I mean, we'll do anything as cutting edge as that. To another company that I'm really excited about that's actually sort of like a, I think, an analog to AI, is a company called Invisible, and they're providing a service where AI is great, but it's not great for everything. They're providing a service where you can essentially make any complex task AI performable, but they essentially just use a network of humans to do the tasks for you. And then they can obviously build processes around them and ultimately create automated tasks for them.
So when you launch a social media platform or a B2B SaaS company, the business models are pretty straightforward. Is there a standard business model that kind of applies to these emerging tech spaces?
It depends. Usually they're either some sort of software related model, whatever that looks like, or in the case of Paradromics, they're selling hardware. So it's sort of more like a traditional medical device model. So usually they, even though the technology is, I think, emerging, the business models tend to be fairly similar to the things that we see more commonplace.
And how do you source deals?
A lot of networking, I'd say, is the big thing. We try to engage universities in a lot of cases, especially for the neurotech related stuff. A lot of that does come out of academia, but it's a mix. You know, we talk to VCs all the time. We talk to our portfolio companies all the time and just try to get a sense for what they're excited about. If they have connections that are building something that's too early for them or too late for them, depending on whether they're investing. So the easy answer is we'll source deals anywhere we can get them. A good deal is a good deal, but it's a lot of work on the networking side for sure.
They sound like capital intensive and long time horizon businesses potentially. How do you think about that in the context of your portfolio?
Yeah, I'd say if I had to break down our portfolio, there's some percentage, maybe it's 30-40% that are probably more capital intensive type businesses, some related to hardware, some maybe have this sort of longer development cycle. And the other portion of the portfolio is more traditional, a more standard business model, maybe a simpler development and solving a more immediate problem. So we do try to be cognizant of that when we build our portfolio, to have some things that are maybe these sort of new markets where you by definition have a longer ramp and then hopefully a hockey stick, and some that are maybe existing markets where it's more linear and you start to see results right away.
Your website says you're a frontier tech company, and we've talked about recycling, we've talked about these neural networks. How much attention do you feel like is being paid to existential human and planet problems versus, like, if you look around CES, how much of our collective human energy is being put into frivolous?
It's a fun question. Probably too much is the easy answer. But I think if you also look at the incentive structure of investing, your job as an investor is to make money for your LPs. and a lot of companies that have made a lot of money in the last 10 years have not necessarily been companies that are saving the world. So again, there's a balance that's probably fair to put between the two. You know, a company like Tesla, even though it seems to be almost like a religion, people either love it or hate it, especially if they're investors, I think they're doing really great things for the world. And it happened to be a venture success, but it was one of those companies that was a really long development cycle, right? It took them.
Still is.
And exactly. They're still not profitable and we're 15 years in, but it's a great company. So I think the answer is we probably aren't. I mean, if we just look at it objectively, we're probably not spending enough time as humanity sort of trying to solve these problems. But I also think it takes kind of a special type of person to be compelled to do that and also have the sort of business ability and leadership ability to get people excited about something like recycling, where it's like, this is going to be a really long road and you might not make a lot of money right away. Maybe you don't make a lot of money ever, versus if you're building a social network, you could say, well, look at Facebook. You know, we could become millionaires if we hit this in a few years, right? So again, I think you just have to think about the incentive structures, what people are motivated by. It'd always be great if there were more people motivated by trying to save the world, but I think just the reality is it's not always the case.
Do you personally have any fears towards existential risk, things like climate change? Like, do you feel like we're facing any real crises?
We talk in the context of our fund a lot about the AI question. Like, if AI does fulfill its promise, like, what happens to jobs? You know, how does that sort of change the way the world works? It's not an easy answer. I think anything, especially when you're involving humanity or climate, these are all complex adaptive systems. And so even if you understand like all the components that go into the system, you still don't understand the system. And so even if you solve like pieces of these problems, you may not necessarily actually solve the problem. And even if you understand pieces of how AI works and how humans might interact with AI, you probably don't understand what the holistic effect of AI will be on humanity in total. And social networking is a perfect example of that. We understand all the pieces of social networking. We did 10 years ago, but nobody could have predicted or said, yeah, like social networks are going to be used to influence elections and they're going to be used for this mass scale bullying and misinformation campaigns, all the crazy stuff that's going on. So I think technology is sort of inherently unpredictable in that sense. And for us, like, we always just try to put the sort of ethical side of our investments onto the founders that we put money in. And, you know, we really want to trust them as people. That's part of our investment assessment, is like, are these the right people to be running companies that could potentially have mass scale impact on the world? And I feel like that's the best margin of safety we really have.
It's interesting to think about complex adaptive systems that might be like existential risks. Is it actually more of an existential risk now, or are we just more aware of it? You know, like, was the complex adaptive system of 60 years ago, you know, where we're making nuclear arms the first time, is that just as dangerous as what we feel today when we're talking about AI?
Yeah. I don't know either. It's one point that I would think about there, and this is not a fully thought out hypothesis, is like, it feels like technology, what it really does in a lot of cases is change the time scale, where the nuclear arms race ended up in this Cold War that lasted 30, 40 years. You know, if there is an AI arms race where we get to a point, this is obviously future, but get to a point where AI is capable of doing, fulfilling some of the promise that we think it can, you know, I don't know if you have like this 50-year Cold War type thing. It feels like the outcomes sort of become more apparent more quickly versus what we've seen historically. Where like maybe the complex adaptive system in like the 1700s was like the steam engine, right? But like that didn't have this all of a sudden like, oh my God, like everybody's life was changed type thing. It had this gradual wave of impact that sort of led to, I think, the Industrial Revolution and became this massive wave, but over 100 plus years, where I think technology now, things seem to happen so much faster, where like the smartphone, for example, you know, adopted in less than 10 years, where almost half the world has one.
It's good for 10-year investment timeframes and IRR.
Right, yeah. If you find the right trend, that's the goal.
I assume you probably do a lot of just like looking at new research that's coming out, and with the number of research universities and, you know, even 4,400 companies here showcasing at CES, how do you parse through the noise to find signal in like really impactful new technology?
It's hard. I think we try to focus on neurotechnology as a vertical that we really try to own as a fund. we haven't seen a lot of other funds playing in that space. And so just by definition, like if we just focus on that category, it helps us narrow that funnel a lot. Because you're right, there's so much stuff that comes out. There's no way that you could keep on top of all the innovation that's happening. So I think that's one thing where we try to focus is that. But yeah, we read a lot of academic research, and some of it is stuff that comes from our companies. And again, some of it's stuff where maybe we have an interest as a team in some particular thing, and we go and do a deep dive on the academic research related to that. So it's really difficult to your point, but I think we try to have these sort of layers of focus and then some intense periods of learning where we really dive deep.
For Neuro, is there a screen that's like, all right, low-hanging fruit, this is bullshit?
Like a heuristic, we'll look at it and say, this is impossible? I can't think of one. Usually, like, stuff that's that bad never gets really in our orbit, I think, where, you know, where we'd say, you know what, we have to validate this. But when we do make investments, we always do our best to validate the tech beforehand.
Have you spent any time looking at aging or anti-aging?
We a little bit, not an expert on it. It's personally a very interesting topic to me. We've invested in a couple companies. One we just announced that I would put in this sort of broad aging bucket, which is called Levels Health. And they actually help people who are non-diabetics get a continuous glucose monitor prescribed to them. And then you can monitor your glucose levels all day long and see how your diet impacts your glucose levels and then optimize your diet based on that. Because what's interesting is, like, if you eat a banana and I eat a banana, we might have very different insulin responses to that food. And if I spike and you don't spike, then I'm more sensitive to that particular type of sugar. And it might be something that I'd want to remove from my diet for performance reasons. But for you, it'd be fine to keep eating it. So knowing specifically how your body responds to certain foods, I think, is part of this broader performance and anti-aging bucket. Another area that I think is really interesting is we've seen things from like Hims and Roman where they're talking more, doing more work about men's health, making it more accessible. I think testosterone replacement therapy is a really interesting area that has not been sort of techified yet and made simple. But I think as an anti-aging and quality of life industry, these clinics can be sketchy, but the industry and like the actual application, I think, is super interesting.
Well, this has been awesome. I'm running up on time. If people want to find out more about you or Loop, where should they go?
They can go to our website, which is loopventures.com. Loop is L-O-U-P. You can find all of our research there and on Twitter.
Hey, listener, have you ever wanted to get a message in front of the Upside audience but weren't sure how to sponsor this show or weren't able to do a long-term sponsorship? Well, now you can just go to upside.fm/classifieds and let our audience know anything that's going on in your world, whether it's an event, an application, a special coupon or deal, or just letting them know who you are, what your company does. All you have to do is go to upside.fm/classifieds and you can place an ad on this show. That's upside.fm/classifieds.
All right, Jay, we just spoke with Doug. Really threw me for a loop on that interview.
I see what you did there, too. Yeah, we really got into it. We said, tell us about the history of Doug. And he was like, well, the history of Doug is very intertwined with the history of Loop, which leads me to believe that Doug may be 4 years old. No, Doug gave us a ton of really great, deep thought exercises there. Doesn't take me long to get out of my depth, as you know, Eric, so I was fighting above my weight class this whole time. I do love the idea of neurotech, which we haven't talked about on this show.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. And as Doug noted, a lot of that research is coming out of the coastal areas, so we just haven't really been able to touch it. But we got to spend some time there, and I like that.
I think we're going to have to find a company in neurotech now. BCI, Brain Computer Interface. Man, that's something that feels like 50 years off, but I'm probably wrong.
Probably wrong. Do you think there's any BCI companies that could help me quickly become the math guy on the show?
I think that's the entire point of being able to do computations faster in your head with a BCI.
I love that. you love reading the blog, Wait, But Why?
I do. It's my favorite blog in the world.
You read the Neuralink piece, I'm sure.
I have.
When I first read that and he described, as Elon described it, this lossless communication, I love that idea, which we didn't speak to specifically here in this interview, but this idea of lossless communication is if there is a brain-computer interface implanted in you. You no longer have to interpret your electrical impulses as thoughts and put them into the technology of language for someone else to understand what you're experiencing in your brain and thinking. You can literally transmit that knowledge directly and have no loss due to the technology of language. Mind-blowing, also terrifying stuff, which I wanted to talk about a little bit with Doug, and we did.
You said the word existential no less than 17 times in that interview.
I'm a little bit of a doomsday guy, to be honest.
You are. You like to find the dark side of technology and bring it out in interviews.
And I'm an optimistic person. I just believe that...
You're the most optimistic pessimist I know.
I'll take that title. That seems fair. Yeah, there's just a lot that we're screwing around with, and I also think we're putting a lot of frivolous energy into things... that we don't need to.
Like VR, apparently.
I don't think VR is necessarily frivolous. I just think that it's very... It has its use cases, and I don't think they're going to be this ubiquitous thing where we're all just walking around in VR headsets all the time. I think AR is way more promising because it's just more of a human experience. Like, it's augmenting your world and not closing you off to the literal people around you. But maybe that's a closed-minded view. Maybe in VR, you're surrounded by people just the same. I could see that. But is that a more human experience? I have a hard time thinking that that's going to be better.
I mean, you are the chief philosophical officer of the podcast, that's for sure.
You think so?
I don't know. I'll give you that title. Do you want it? You want to be the CPO?
CPO, most optimistic pessimist, co-producer, CEO of the Up Company.
Well, okay.
Stack of the titles.
I just keep on getting no titles, and you get... three, including CPO.
My LinkedIn headline is running out of space.
Yeah, maybe this outro is running out of space because we are running up on time.
Real quick, though, what was your highlight of this conversation?
I love frontier tech, the futuristic aspect of it. I love hearing what people think is real and fake. I love talking about market history and this idea of false starts. I mean, I really just liked this interview in general because it's so different than what we get a lot of times in the Midwest, where it's, hey, we're creating a marketplace, or hey, we're creating a B2B SaaS company, or hey, we're using some hard sciences and we're going to try to license them out. This was much more mind expanding than most of the type of venture firms that we talk to around the middle of the country.
I'd love to dig more into this. Someday we'll get our unofficial friend, Josh Wolf, on the show.
Our unofficial friend, yeah.
Our unofficial friend, our unreciprocated friend.
Josh Wolf, if you hear this, come on the show.
Wow. We'll be back talking a little bit more here from CES 2020 soon. But until that time, tweet at us at UpsideFM or email us hello@upside.fm. And we'll talk to you next week.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's guest, so shoot us an email at hello@upside.fm or find us on Twitter @UpsideFM. We'll be back here next week at the same time talking to another founder in our quest to find upside outside of Silicon Valley. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for our show, please email us or find us on Twitter and let us know. And if you love our show, please leave us a review on iTunes. That goes a long way in helping us spread the word and continue to help bring high-quality guests to the show. Eric and I decided there are a couple things we wanted to share with you at the end of the podcast, and so here we go. Eric Hornung and Jay Klaus are the founding parties of the Upside Podcast. At the time of this recording, we do not own equity or other financial interest in the companies which appear on this show. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinions of Duff & Phelps LLC and its affiliates, Unreal Collective LLC and its affiliates, or any entity which employ us. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. We have not considered your specific financial situation nor provided any investment advice on this show. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Never mind. Bro, that can't be mad. I'm lighting it on fire. Used to run victory last. And still, I'm not even tired. It's all about the timing, about the timing. Yeah, that's what they say. Well, I'ma keep on rhyming, find a way.